This is the old Polk directory, huh? Same as the city directory?
No, I don't think this is Polk. I don't know who put this on.
Ideal, it says.
Ideal directory. I remember talking about directories. You know, that's the way we get started here, isn't it?
Yeah.
One thing brings up another, but I remember Edwin Oakes, that was the boss's youngest brother, who was my age, 2 days younger than I was. And when he was in high school, he wrote a directory of Grand Haven for a summer job, yeah. And he did a good job of it, too. And I was just a kid. I don't know what year it was. The boss, I've known my ex-boss, James W. Oakes, for years, even before I ever went to work for him. And he said to me one time, Johnny, he says, you want a little job? He says, Edwin's got a bunch of these directories. He said, maybe you could take them up to Grand Rapids and sell some of them. I said, what would anybody in Grand Rapids want to do with a Grand Haven directory? He says, mailing list. I never thought of that. And I said, yeah, okay. So I don't know how old I was, maybe 16, 18. I wasn't working at the Weather Bureau at that time. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I was worked up there when I was 16. But anyway, I took a bunch of these directories up to Grand Rapids, and I went up and down the main street asking for the advertising manager of all these big stores. I sold one.
Did you?
Just one.
One?
Yeah. And that was to Jack Rappaport. Jack Rappaport, later, maybe that was the seed that was planted, but he started a credit clothing store down here on the 100 block, or the first block of Washington Street down there where Don Rosso's garage is.
Mm-hmm.
And where the Chamber of Commerce's first office was. And Jack did quite a business. And later he sold it out to John Grubender and Esther, John and Esther Grubender, and they started the Style Shop.
Oh.
So that was the start of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe I had something to do with the Style Shop coming here after all.
Maybe you did.
Well, this one's in 1914. I was just looking through here. Of course, here's DeBoo's Confectionery. Pete DeBoo had a confectionery store down where Arger's clothing store is now, in that same building.
Oh.
And Pete was probably one of the best known and best liked men on Washington Street, particularly with the kids.
Is that right?
He made delicious candy and sold ice cream and stuff like that. This was strictly a soda fountain.
Mm-hmm.
There was no restaurant or anything else. You couldn't get a sandwich there or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just a soda fountain. And Pete later, after he sold out, he went to work for Hofstetter, Paul Hofstetter. And he just wanted a part-time job, so he sold papers over there, took care of the store. And then he began making his caramels again there, and they sold them there for a long, long time.
Did he make good caramel?
Oh, boy, did he make a good caramel. You know these Kraft caramels that you buy wrapped up?
Yes, I like those.
Well, if you thought they were good, if you think they're good, you should have had one of Pete DeBoo's caramels.
Is that right? Did he make all his own candy?
All of it.
Mm-hmm. What about ice cream?
He made his ice cream, too.
Did?
Yeah. You know, in the back end of the store. He made everything he sold, except the Coca-Colas and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's where I drank my first Coca-Cola.
Did you?
Yeah. A fella gave me a nickel tip one time when I was peddling papers, and my brother Lewis and I were peddling papers, and we went down to Pete DeBoo's and bought a Coca-Cola with two straws.
Did you?
Lou and I finished. That was the first Coca-Cola. Well, then we go on to this book, and here's J.C. Jurgensen. He was the Grand Haven Realty Company. He's on the front cover, so he probably was quite a prominent realtor. I remember he wasn't a realtor because they didn't have realtors in those days. He was a real estate salesman. But Jurgie was, he was a little bit of everything. Kind of I wouldn't say a curbstone broker because he had an office. But then later he went into built the, well, he didn't build that building right off. He took two old buildings that were down there on 105 and 109 Washington Street, and he put a pump on the street, on the curb, and sold tires and batteries and gasoline and so on and so forth. That was his, they didn't have filling stations to drive in. He sold gasoline there. And then during the war, there was a gasoline shortage during World War One, and the cars were lined up from his place down to the bank. You talk about lined up for gasoline. And he sort of slid out of the real estate business, and he went into that business, and he made some money while he was in these little buildings. But when he built this big building, and then he consolidated, and it didn't work. The jerky went the way of all.
Where was this restaurant, John, that was on
Van Dreeser's?
Yeah.
So that was right down there where, next to where Rappaport started at the clothing store. That was the where Rosso is now. He's the fellow I talked about him, the big fat man.
Mm-hmm.
His wife had one arm.
Oh, yes, I remember you talking about him.
That was a real restaurant. That was a good, clean restaurant. Well, looking through some of the names here, lots of these people are gone years ago. Harry Duffield, he was the proprietor of the Eagle Restaurant at 26 Washington Street. That's down where the Grand Theater is now. Harry was an Englishman, and he and his wife ran this restaurant there. And he was the chef or the cook for Company F when they went to war.
Oh, really?
World War One. And he went with them. And looking through, I'm just looking at some of the heavy print.
Mm-hmm.
Hans Dykhouse. Hans was the sheriff. And East End Drugstore, Van Nuys proprietor, 216 Washington Street. 216 Washington Street is where, well, it's right down below here, where, what's her name, the beauty parlor is.
Oh.
And they call that the East End Drugstore. Now, you remember I've been telling you that when Grand Haven was young, that 4th Street was the limits of it. Well,
wasn't that where Wheeler's?
That's where Wheeler
was. Where Wheeler later was?
Yeah, that was the East End Drugstore, 216.
Well, it's been a drugstore for a long time, isn't it?
Can you imagine where the West End one might have been? Yeah, Eckens. Garrett Eckens and Company, grocery store, 206 Washington Street. Garrett was the last of the old-time grocery stores.
Did he have the ladders on the shelves where he'd serve you? I mean, you'd always have to stand at the counter, and he'd have to go get stuff for you?
He went to get it, you betcha. The coffee mill was up in front when you came in there. They had the smell of coffee all over the place.
Oh, I love that smell, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Garrett got to curing cheese.
Oh, really?
And if you wanted good cheese, like now, you go to Fortino's.
Mm-hmm.
But in those days, why, you went to Garrett Eckens. Well, let's see. Fant, Monument Works. Fire, George A. He was an attorney. He has his office in this building. Let's see where, gives his address at 420 Howard. That's where he lives. Oh, here we are. Fire, Kline, and Fire. State Bank, their office. Enterprise Clothing Company, that's a name that was dear to me because I worked for that John Vannebush.
Oh, that's the one that you worked for?
Yeah, 230 Washington Street. That's downstairs where we're going to move in. That was, it didn't last very long.
The
place burned up. This whole building caught fire about 1918. But I worked for John at the time of the fire.
John, that doesn't look like a Dutch name down the bottom of the page there.
Bumbursky. It says V.C. Bumbursky. That was Van Bumbursky. He bought out H.V. Bolt's grocery store at 401 Fulton Street. My dad was working in the meat market alongside of it. Bolt had this grocery store and meat market combination. There were two stores there. He had the little butcher shop there. Brother, did they used to make bologna and sausage.
Did they?
Mm-hmm. Boy. And then he started the grocery store, and that got to be a little bit too much for him, so he sold it to V.C. Bumbursky. And Van was a, oh, he was a real fine fellow. He was a Polish fellow.
Mm-hmm.
And he taught me a few Polish words.
Did he?
Good ones.
Did he?
Yeah. Cuss words. And he was a very fine fellow.
You know, we've been talking about some good homemade food already today. You talked about you talked about those good homemade caramels and cured cheese and now this homemade bologna.
Yeah. Here's Fortney, Delbert. Deputy sheriff. He later got to be sheriff.
Did he?
Yeah. And he was a prize fighter.
My land.
And I'll never forget, there was a fellow who was pretty drunk down here on the corner of 3rd and Washington Street, over by the big church. And he was plastered. He was really plastered. And they threw him on Shorty Vandenhoek's baggage wagon and hauled him to the jail. And when he got to the jail, he was just drunk enough so that he was not going to go to jail.
Oh.
And he put up a fight. They wouldn't dare to do this today, but Dell was, as I say, was a prize fighter. And finally, he got sick of monkeying with this guy, and he turned around with his left hand, he doubled up his fist, and he backhanded this guy in the mouth, and he went, that's the way it sounded, like he hit an empty box. The fella keeled over, and they didn't have any more trouble getting him in jail. I don't know how long he was out, but...
Didn't they, what did they use otherwise for transportation for police cars in those days, John? Did anybody...
Nobody had a...
Did they just go get a baggage wagon?
Anything. Anything they could get, yeah. Well, we could go in through this book and I could go through. Here's A.M. Cosgrove. You remember we talked about the Wiley Waterworks?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was the fella. Waterworks and plumbing goods, gas piping and drain laying. All work guaranteed and prices reasonable. 16 North 7th, phone 471W.
Well, the Wiley, what's the Wiley name then?
I suppose that was named after Wiley, who was an old Grand Haven settler.
Oh, I see. Settler. But Cosgrove did it, huh?
Cosgrove owned it, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know whether Wiley started it or who started it, but Cosgrove owned it when I was a kid.
That water tastes better, too, didn't it, John?
Yeah, that's what they said. Oh, boy, that was good. It all came out of the same pipe.
Didn't they used to have some mineral water across the street from here?
Yes.
Whatever happened to that water? I mean, were those wells or what?
They were flowing wells.
Like artesian? Well.
Yes. And just this afternoon, I had a picture of the mineral wells. We call that the Annex. They were the Annis House. And it was called the Cutler Annex. And because of the fact that we're presently moving into the Cutler House, that's what our office was, the Cutler House.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this building was here. I am planning to use the phrase, our office is in the Cutler House.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had the picture of the original Cutler House. That burned down, as I said, in 1889 with the rest of the town, this end of town. But they've been doing some work in the Cutler House, and in going down in the basement, we find that the foundation of the Cutler House, of this building, the Masonic Temple, is the original foundation of the Cutler House that burned down in 1889.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How were you able to determine that?
Oh, just the way it's built.
Is that right?
Yeah. And then across the street was the Annis House, and they called that the Cutler Annex, and that's where the mineral water was.
Uh-huh.
Now, you know, as I've told you different times and mentioned different times on this radio, that the popularity of the Cutler House and the advertising on it was their water and the curative properties that this water has.
Yes.
If they advertise today any product with the story that they have had with that water, they'd put them all in jail. I see where they're getting after the Listerine people,
right,
because they say it keeps you from getting a cold or cures a cold. Well, this water would cure anything.
What?
Sore throat, ingrown toenails, chilblains, rheumatism and everything else. And this picture, I left it downstairs. I took it down to Kirk's to see whether we could reproduce it, but it's too old. It's mildewed and it's too old. But it showed the people around it standing out in front. I think this was a posed picture of the people standing out in front and around the ground. Mm-hmm. The thing set back quite a ways. Well, not directly.
It was outside?
Pardon?
It was outside, John?
No, I mean the building.
Oh,
I don't know where the well was, whether the well was outside or whether the well was in the building. But you don't, or do you, remember the old library on 3rd Street?
Yes,
well,
I think so.
That's about where the Cutler Annex stood. Probably not quite that far back, but not directly where the bank, mm-hmm. where the post office was. And there was a nice lawn and the formal garden and walks and so on around there. And in this picture, these people were all standing out there. And Kirk says, I'm sure that's a posed picture. The ladies with long dresses. Of course, they wore them in those days. Now they wear them to a party, and they're dressed up.
Yeah.
That's what they wore all the time. But anyway, this was quite a picture. I'm awfully sorry that it can't be reproduced. But I have one of the Cutler House that I had reproduced.
I wonder what they did with all that water. On Artesia Well flows.
Saratoga of the West.
They had to keep that water going somewhere. They must have drained.
They probably what they
because it's flowing.
Let it run.
Yeah, you can't
they
stifle it.
Didn't have any sewers either in those days.
Oh boy,
but
that's
they
right.
People came here from all over to bathe and drink that water.
My land,
and it was lousy tasting.
Was it?
Yeah, I never drank any of that, but there was the Spring Lake House over in Spring Lake that had the same type of water. And Mr. Oakes bought that ground, and the well is there, and I don't know how much money he spent in re-drilling that well.
He didn't want that water, huh?
No. But we called him Rudy Nebs for a while. So you remember Knox Age in the cartoon in the press? Well, Rudy Nebs had a well like that, and they called it Knox Age. Noxage.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose they figured that this well would keep you from getting old in this water.
Mm-hmm.
And we called Jim Rudy Nebs for a while because he was trying to reestablish that well.
Did you taste it?
Yes. It was terrible.
Was it?
Yeah, it's still over there. It's capped now, but you can get water out of it. It was dirty. It had a lot of iron in it.
Sure.
And it was brownish. It wasn't very appetizing looking. But after he got that well going, he put a pump on it. It wasn't an artesian well anymore. The kids had thrown stones in it and everything.
Oh, boy.
He re-drilled it and everything, but it still wasn't flowing like it should. So he got it running. And somewhere around the office was a... the well, the properties that are in it.
Yeah, I don't know what to call that.
Well,
stuff that's in the water?
Yeah, just telling you what percentage of this and that and other things in it.
Yeah,
think of the word now.
Yeah.
But it had iron and...
I wonder if it was even safe.
Oh, yeah,
was
sure.
It?
We used to drink. It never did anything to you.
Didn't it?
No. But there was an osteopath or chiropractor doctor from up north somewhere who used to come down to Spring Lake every year with about 100-gallon jugs. And he'd get that water and take it back up to his office up there. You can draw your own conclusions out of that.
He probably made some pretty good money on it, though, if it got him to come back down here again.
Well, we were talking about that snowstorm, you know, a while back, 1936. And
that's the year
morning,
I was born.
Yeah, that's the year you were born. And Ray Verplank came in this morning, and he gave me a group of photos. I was showing them to Kirk this afternoon. He said he thinks Bill Mosier took them. Here's one that... taken in February 1936 on Sheldon Road, right at the intersection of Sheldon and Howard. This house that's shown here was the J. Johnson house, and Ed Kinkema lives in. Look at the snow pile there. Here's another one out on out the other side of Spring Lake. You can barely see the top of the house. They say the lady that lived in that house died during that snowstorm, and it was a couple of days before they could remove
really?
The body. Here is a picture of the River Road. Look at the snow. That snow is piled up higher than your head.
My goodness.
Higher than a car.
Yeah.
Here's another one out on Sheldon Road where the snowplow is working. And here's one of Spring Lake.
Hmm.
Here's a picture of Harbor Avenue. Look at the snowdrift compared to the size of the man.
Wow.
And this is the entrance to the Oval. Could you imagine an automobile being in there? And here's, we were talking about plow. Here's that big V plow. That belonged to the county.
Oh, yeah.
And that's cutting a path out Sheldon Road.
Well, that is a big one, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Oh, boy, beautiful old 34 Ford there.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Here's another one. This is on Sheldon Road. This is about by Johnson's. You can just see the tail end of that Ford sticking out there.
Yeah.
Now, you talk about snow.
You know what I don't understand, though, is I was born in November of 36. And my parents were saying that that's when they had so much snow then that they could hardly travel. Now, did we have two winters back to back? This is February of 36.
This is February 36.
And that'd be the winter
yeah.
before.
Yeah. Well, you were born where?
In November, Muskegon.
In Muskegon?
And I still remember them talking about how, you know,
yeah.
what kind of roads it was going to the hospital.
Yeah.
And it was the,
yeah.
supposedly
well,
the year of the bad storm.
We had them right along there. This was one of the worst ones that I could remember in those days. And this is 36. I can remember one in 15. And a lot of these pictures that you see of the boat stuck in the harbor, I think, didn't Van Zantwicks have one of the Alabama and the car ferry in the harbor the other day?
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I think so. That was probably back in 1918. Mm-hmm. That was a beautiful picture of those two ships.
Uh-huh. I didn't see that.
It used to be that they'd be piled up there in the lake, in the harbor. Some of them made it to the harbor, some of them didn't.
If you had a storm like that in 15, and you had drifts like you're showing me here, John, who'd clear through them?
Well,
you didn't
in
have
15,
a
they didn't care, because they didn't have very few automobiles running.
But how'd you get out of your house? I mean, somebody had to cut through.
With a shovel.
And just walk on top from that
walk
point on?
You got out, you know. I peddled papers about in 15, and I walked
just
on.
Just snowshoes?
No.
Well, what, you fall through?
Sure.
Push through it?
You could get through it. At that time, as a kid, it was kind of fun.
I suppose.
And
I still kind of like it. I don't like the hardship.
I can't shovel snow anymore, so it's bad for me, but...
I still kind of like the nice
fun.
Snowballs.
It's when it's nice and pretty. And,
yeah. What's this picture here?
Well, this is a picture that Ray Swanson gave me, and he had an enlargement made of it. That's the Pier Marquette Depot back in the horse and buggy days. There's the bus
mm-hmm.
with a team of horses, and there's the baggage wagon. That was Shorty Vandernoot's baggage wagon.
Whose bus was that, John?
I don't know who owned that bus. I don't know whether that belonged to Shorty or not, but I think it did. He was in the transportation business in those days. That was before taxis. Look at that. There's a woman just got off the train holding up her dress.
Yeah.
She's got a dress right to the ground.
Yep.
I said, now that's everyday apparel. Now they wear them for a party.
Well, that's,
and her coat is just as long. Look at the hat she's got on there. And this was probably taken in the summer or spring because there's no snow around.
Oh, yeah, and the windows are open on the train.
The windows, a little baby or a little bit of a kid with his sticking his head out of the train.
Now, do you suppose that's the wagon that carried the drunk, John?
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I wouldn't. It was just exactly
was
like
it?
That, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised, but what that was the wagon, you know? Yeah.
So where was that?
That was where the CNO Depot is now.
On 4th and Madison?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That was the Pier Marquette,
That
then.
Was the Pier Marquette in those days, yeah. I still call it the Pier Marquette Depot when I think of it.
Yeah. Was that, now you had, was this other depot always down here on the waterfront too, John?
Grand Trunk?
Yeah.
Yes. That was always just the way it is now.
Was it?
The same building.
Yeah.
I bet that building's been there 125 years.
Really?
Yes. Maybe longer.
But were you served by two rail lines?
Yeah.
Passenger service?
Mm-hmm.
That right?
That's the only way you could get in now.
Yeah, but where would these go? Well, where'd the Pier Marquette go?
From Muskegon to Chicago. Or from up north, but it came here
out
of Muskegon.
It came through here on the way going to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And what about the Grand Trunk? Where'd that go?
The Grand Trunk ended here and then went to Muskegon and then to Grand Rapids and Chicago. And
it used to be a Grand Trunk.
That went to Detroit too.
Yeah.
You see, the Grand Trunk was a Canadian railway.
Oh.
And that went, and it still is.
Is it?
Owned by the Canadian, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went to Detroit. That was a good railway.
Yeah, I took that train from Muskegon to Detroit, that Grand Trunk train.
Mm-hmm.
But then they used to have a little one-car dealer called a Doodlebug. I just ran from Muskegon to Grand Rapids.
Oh, yeah.
That was just a one-car deal.
Grand Trunk?
Yeah.
Well, you see, that was probably, what, you took that?
Yeah,
I took it when I was a kid. Then that would have been after 1936. I don't remember that.
But it had to be around 40 because I was very little. I remember it.
See, that line was serviced by the Interurban. And the Interurban went kaput in 1928.
Oh, did it?
So maybe this Grand Trunk went the other way then.
But I remember having taken the Doodlebug.
Yeah. How are we doing here?
Well, we got about 2 minutes to go yet, John.
Okay.
We're not going to get off on too much of another story anymore, are we?
No. Well, I was just looking.
You were talking about that one lady died.
Yeah.
The house. Didn't you tell us about another time? One time when they had such a Dickens of a time when someone had died. They had to try to...
Had to use a sleigh
or something?
A regular sleigh and a team of horses.
How far back was that, would you guess?
Well, my brother Bill was working with Boer in those days.
What's Boer?
Well, John Boer was a mortician, undertaker in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And he was about 16, so that would probably have been... 1918 or something like that. Maybe he was younger than that.
What did the morticians have then? Did they have a funeral home, or did they did they operate out of a store? Or
they
something?
Operated out of the store, and the body was at the home.
Well, the body would be back
home. Yeah.
Well, then where did they display, like, the caskets and that?
That was in the stores.
Would there be a store on the street, you mean, or something?
Yeah, they didn't display them in the windows or anything like that. But now, I remember in Boer's store, he had them upstairs.
I
suppose Keel did, too.
But was his combined with another kind of business?
Furniture.
Oh, really?
Sure.
I see.
Big sign on the door, furniture and undertaking.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Huh.
And then they would... They wouldn't remove the body.
Oh.
They'd go to the house and take care of it.
I see. They do the embalming there, too?
At the house, And then the funeral was either at the house or at the church.
Oh, that sure changed over the years.
That changed over the years, yes.
John, our time is gone.
Well, been interesting. Yes, it is.
And we're going to tape another half hour before you go away sometime,
okay, did you tape this one?
Yeah.
Good, because I would like to have the tape on that.
Yeah, we'll have a tape for you.
And I bought a tape recorder the other day so I can...
Good.
And listen to them once in a while. Maybe someday people tell me, why don't you write a book? Well, maybe someday I might.
Okay.
I get old enough.
All right.
Well, it's been nice talking.
Thank you. Thank you for being up here. We'll look for you in a month, John.
Okay, the Lord willing, I'll be here.
All right. I guess
I won't be here in a month. I'll tape one so that you can use it in a month.
All right.
Yep.
Our guest on today's program has been John Van Skelvin.
Talk with Old Timers.